Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big, we go all night, and here everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. Full crew here on a Wednesday, and why not? It is the start of the Major League Baseball season. We got the Sporting Tribunes, Grant Mona, Brandon Deutsch, Jake Dichter, G. Hay Wiley, full crew. This is amazing. We all either stayed up or got up. Probably a little bit easier for Jake. Actually, like a lot more easier for Jake. But all right, listen, I don't even know where to begin. Let's start with Grant, just because we've been talking for quite some time. If he was going to stay up to watch this amazing lineup, and I was 50-50, and then I saw the Dodgers post the lineup, and I said, oh my God, it's finally here. The dream lineup is finally here. Grant, did you stay up? Did you watch the entire game? What did you think?
I did stay up. I did drift a little bit here and there, so I missed some tweets and stuff, but I did stay up for the first, I think, five innings, and then I fell asleep for like the sixth and seventh, but fortunately, I was up for the eighth when they made their rally. What a game. I mean, it was, I think, as advertised. Tyler Glasnow was a little bit shaky. I think he had four walks. He gave up a few earned runs. That's to be expected with him. He's not a guy that's really pinpoint with his command. I kind of expected that. I expected him to go four or five. He's not going to be a guy that goes six or seven for the Dodgers. We got to see Shohei Ohtani get his first hit, his first RBI. We got to see Mookie Betts at shortstop in action in a regular season game for the first time, and he looked very good. I didn't see any, there's some shots hit at him, and he handled them very well. With that late rally in the eighth, Teoscar Hernandez was a big part of that. James Outman was a big part of that. Max Muncy was on a few times. The team looked as good as advertised. Now, look, through the first six or seven innings, I was like, is this game one of the playoffs from last year? Because it seems like they could not get anybody in. They left the bases loaded a few times. They left runners on, a lot of runners on. So I was a little bit concerned, but with the firepower of this team, they're going to win regular season games like this. I mean, if you have Shohei Ohtani at the top of the lineup, Freddie Freeman didn't even have that great of a game. He had two walks, went 0-for-2. Gavin Lux went 0-for-5, but that, I guess it's now infamous. Now it's going over social media everywhere, where it went through Cronenworth's glove to kind of open the lead and give them a bigger lead. Another big thing, the bullpen was excellent. Again, Ryan Brazier, Daniel Hudson, Evan Phillips, they were dominant, just like they were in the playoffs last year, just like they were in the second half of last year. So I saw a lot of things that I saw in the regular season last year, but it's just really good to get things going.
Jake, let's go to you. You are in Wisconsin, so was not maybe as hard, but did you wake up bright and early to see the Dodgers' first game of the season?
Yeah, I was up at 4:45. got my like 5 hours of sleep prior and have been up since. But the Dodgers, it was fun, but I'm gonna be the devil's advocate here, and I don't think the Dodgers played well enough to win this game. Tyler Glasnow was good, walked 4, but the Padres walked 9. Which, I mean, is going to happen because you can't pitch to these guys at the top of the lineup because, I mean, you kind of have to because there's more just coming up right after them, but they like to pitch around these guys. Outman walked twice, ball through a glove. I've never seen that, especially at a time like that in the game. I tweeted about it. I said, it's going to be hard to beat this team regardless, but when you start, adding things like that into the mix, it's going to become next to impossible. Glasnow was good. I know Grant said that he's probably not going to be a 6 or 7 inning guy. He only threw 77 pitches. So when they ramp him up a little bit, even with the control issues, only gave up 2 hits. He can get up to that 6 inning mark. I think that's kind of what they're hoping out of him. But, good teams find ways to win games they probably shouldn't win. Bad teams find ways to lose games they probably shouldn't lose. And that's, what you got with the Dodgers and the Padres. So Yamamoto in game 2 should be super, super fun. That atmosphere is going to be great. But it's just fun to watch meaningful baseball again.
Yeah, I wanted to add something there, too, because I watched the end of this game, not the first half. I wasn't going to wake up. I was up till midnight, so I wasn't going to just, go to sleep for 3 hours and wake up. But I woke up around 5:10 and saw, obviously, the Cronenworth play, which still, baffles me. I don't know how it went through his glove, why it wasn't tied or whatever. I mean, that was, a ridiculous play. Did they rule that a hit? That's a hit, right?
No.
Okay, good. Okay, as long as they didn't rule that a hit.
It's a pretty brutal way to pick up an error as a defender, though.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. But no, I saw a lot of great things from the Dodgers. We know this is a team that's going to win 100-plus games in the regular season. And I think this is the perfect team that can really take a series a week early, two-game series, whatever, early on and play really well. Take, not a week off, because obviously they're going to be playing the exhibition games. But, and be able to really not lose a step when they actually play on March, 28th, 29th again. So I think this is a perfect team because you could literally put this all-star team out there at any time and they're going to produce. But I agree with Jake to a sense. I didn't see, the dominance I think we expect, but we're not expected to see that right away. I think it's going to take some time, maybe a June push from them.
Yeah. Jihei is with us, but she is preparing for her big road trip to Las Vegas, so she'll chime in. We will have Fernando Ramirez, by the way, joining us from USC Pro Day to give us his thoughts on the Padres' perspective. What do you guys think generally, however, of this weird situation where Shohei Ohtani's first game with the Los Angeles Dodgers is on a Wednesday at 3:00 in the morning local time? Again, they have 2 games out there. Then they come back, and I've never seen this happen in professional sports. These are regular season games, but they come back for a couple of exhibition games. I mean, we can joke about Major League Baseball, and we probably have 3 of the youngest Major League Baseball fans with us, just in terms of what the league is trying to do, but this is so confusing to me. And again, I think, forgot who tweeted this out, I want to give them credit, but I mean, this would be like Patrick Mahomes signing with the Cowboys and you begin the season on Wednesday night at 3:00, game in the morning in Germany or something. I mean, this is just the weirdest way to begin the season. Jake, well, let me just start with you. I guess 2-part. A, that the game, that their season begins Wednesday, 3:00 in the morning Pacific time. And then again, they play 2 games that count, and then again, I think, 2 or 3 back in Los Angeles that do not count.
Yeah, it's definitely a weird situation. The Dodgers have done this before. In 2014, they opened the year against Arizona in Australia.
That's right.
Played two games and then came back and did the same kind of thing. It's a weird situation because this was announced in July of 2023, right? Pre-Shohei Ohtani, pre-Yamamoto. So the fact that those guys are now here and these are their debuts makes it look a little bit worse for Major League Baseball than it was. But it is weird to me that they went with Korea and then picked two teams from the West Coast. Like, I understand proximity wise, but time wise, I mean, it doesn't make, like, no one here is able to watch those games unless you're waking up at 3 a.m. I mean, for me out here, it was a little bit easier. 5 a.m. on the East Coast, 6 a.m. is just an early start to your day, right? But for the fans of these teams, I mean, you're asking them to alter their day before, alter their day after, 2 days in a row. So it's definitely a really weird situation. Then you come back and you have to play games that don't count. I don't really know how you turn that switch on and then turn it off and then turn it back on. I think it'll be really interesting to see what those lineups look like for those games, against the Angels. The Dodgers could probably put out their, prospect squad from spring training and go out there against Zach Neto and Nolan Shanwell. Brandon, I'm sorry if I'm upsetting you right now. and do pretty well. Not that those games mean a thing, but it's definitely interesting. Like, I woke up to text from people that are saying they had no idea this was happening because it wasn't marketed well and it wasn't advertised well, which, I mean, as a Dodger fan, I probably saw significantly more advertising for this than your average fan did. So I was a little confused that they hadn't seen it, but I guess that probably is why. But it's definitely weird. It's all about growing the game. It's an economic opportunity to capitalize on a market where baseball is already thriving. We've seen them try to do this going to Mexico. They want to get back to Puerto Rico. So this isn't the last we'll see of this, but it's definitely an interesting situation to start to the 2024 year.
Yeah, like, on one hand, I do give them kudos to try to grow the game globally, and I do remember those games in Australia, which was on a cricket field or something like that. I mean, like, so again, like, these are cool moments. But yeah, when you're talking about Shohei Ohtani's first game, a game that counts, you wish more people in Los Angeles could have seen it. I mean, Grant, your thoughts on, I guess on one hand, the league trying to grow the sport globally, but on the other, I mean, it's just a rough, like, if this game started at midnight, that'd be one thing. If it started at 3 o'clock in the morning, it's just a really brutal beginning.
Yeah, especially when it's opening night for, like, the global star of the game, right? I mean, I know that people are probably awake on the East Coast at 6 a.m. My biggest thing is, I understand that you want to bring Ha-Sung Kim in there, and I don't know if that's the reason why they put the Padres in there, because Ha-Sung Kim's a pretty big star in Korea, but, like, why not do Dodgers-Yankees? Like, why not do the Dodgers and the Braves? Like, some, like, really elite matchup to where it's, like, two teams that are globally known, not the Padres. I mean, the Padres are they're a known team just because they have more stars now, but they're not, like, a globally marketed team right now. That was one of my things about it, was why not just put the two best teams out there? Like, why not just put the Dodgers and Yankees? I know it was announced in July 2023, you know, before Juan Soto was there, but still. So that was my main thing. The other thing is that, like, I understand, like, I always want to grow the game, right? You'd put it in as many markets as possible. But for this to be opening night and then go back to playing meaningless baseball, I like Jake said, I guarantee you the Dodgers lineup is just going to be their AAA lineup against the Angels, whatever they put out there. I don't think the Dodgers are going to play any of their top guys. I mean, I don't even think I would want to play in any of those games, just because you go from the excitement and the height of these Korean games, you travel, you're invested into all the culture and everything, and then you have to go back to just regular, basically spring training baseball. This is just one of the reasons why a lot of people boo Rob Manfred when he gets onto any podium or any stage. And it's just, I understand that you're trying to cater to the Korean, you know, the Korean time zone, but this is the MLB, right? And all the teams are in North America. So if you're going to try to market it that way and try to market your biggest star in Shohei Ohtani, put it at a more reasonable time. I mean, I'm not asking for 5 p.m. prime time. I'm just asking for something a little better.
Yeah. Jihei, did you stay up for the game? Did you get up? Did you watch it?
To be fair and honest, I watched the first inning, guys. I'm not going to lie to you. I went back to bed. But I mean, this is one of those things where, like, I think that they're trying to cater to the East Coast versus the West Coast. Like, you always want those East Coast numbers. You don't always want those West Coast numbers. Obviously, we're going to, like, as fans, most Dodger fans might have, like, stayed up for it or woken up for it or whatever. But I don't think they're catering to the West Coast or trying to at all. That being said, I mean, I hope they never do this again. I'm just not going to front. I really hope they never do this again. I just don't think it was great. It was a great idea. I just don't think it was a great idea.
Listen, I mean, I think, you know, our friends in Hawaii, I think it began at midnight. Perfect. If you're back east, 6 a.m., that's perfect. I just think for the local fans in Los Angeles, that was rough. Brandon, you predicted that Shohei Ohtani would end up with the Dodgers, so no shock to you. But I think we've really seen more of his personality. Again, we've seen his beautiful wife on this trip. She's a former basketball player. He's smiling. He's laughing. He's having a good time during these sit-down conversations with Betts and Freeman. Your thoughts watching Shohei Ohtani again? I know you thought this day would come, but how does it feel watching him and watching what he's doing right now?
I think it's very important that he is on a big stage, right? Like with the Dodgers. Like, no offense to the Angels at all, but they didn't market him well. The team wasn't good. There's a ton of stuff that the Angels did wrong in handling Shohei Ohtani, which eventually led to him leaving. Let's call a spade a spade. It's nothing against the organization. Very few organizations can really handle Ohtani the way the Dodgers can, or maybe perhaps the Yankees, or, you know, the top tier organizations, the huge markets. And the Angels simply weren't that, despite them being in Southern California. So a lot of people are now going to start to see him more and more. And I know they were putting him on ESPN when he was on the Angels and they were trying to market him, but we're going to see it to a whole nother level now. I think that's important in growing the game of baseball. I think the Dodgers' connection to Japan is now huge, obviously, with Yamamoto, Ohtani, and maybe Roshi Sasaki in a few years, or whenever he decides to be posted next year or the year after. This is a lineage thing. So I get why they have the Dodgers there in that proximity. I guess can make sense, Grant said, but I would have had the Yankees. Yankees, big other big brand. Like, you got to have the two big brands for a game like this.
Jake, does it feel surreal to kind of see this team take the field? Again, this was sort of the dream offseason in terms of the players they brought in. As you see them take the field, first game of the season, your thoughts?
It's just so much star power. Like, it's, you don't see, you get these teams with these studs where you get the guys at the top, or your four-time all-star, your MVP. You know, in baseball, it's just hard to pile these guys, right? And they found a way to do it. And it's not like they did it in, you know, they did it in one offseason where they brought in a bunch of guys this year, but they made their Mookie move, made their Freddie move, and now it just seems like every year they're destined to do something great like this. And as Brandon mentioned, Roki Sasaki out of Japan could be the next one, and honestly could be the best one if he pans out the way that people are expecting him to. But yeah, it's a different kind of group. It's not your homegrown Dodger, you know, Corey Seager, Cody Bellinger, Justin Turner, who they took a flyer on. It's not that group, but it's a group that's going to go out there and is the most dangerous lineup in baseball, maybe next to Atlanta. And it's just star after star after star. It's going to be really fun as a fan to watch.
Grant, you kind of joked about this, but when you were watching the beginning of this game and the runners in scoring positions, and you're like, wait, do we pick up where we left off? Like, what the heck is going on? I mean, were you in a position, and again, you've been supportive of this team for years, but like, were you in a position after this past postseason where you were thinking, man, if they don't do something, like, am I really going to go to the Dodger Stadium as many times as I did? Am I going to invest myself? Because it's been frustrating, and I don't want to discount the World Series during the pandemic, but like, listen, it wasn't a 162 game season. It took place in front of like 10,000 fans. So what this would mean if they won during a full normal season. Where were you at prior to them having the summer that they did?
Yeah, I mean, after that
that first round loss, I mean, that was probably the lowest I've been as a Dodger fan in a long time. Just because, you know, I know in 2022 they lost to the Padres in the first round, and that was a low point as well. But to get swept after being a one seed, or, you know, being up there as a one or two seed and winning as many games as you did in a year that you weren't supposed to, it hurt a lot. But I think the Dodgers front office was hurt too, because, and I think they understood how the fans felt, because they went out and immediately made moves to improve the team. And I think that that just erased, honestly, all of the doubt that I had about this team coming into this year. If you don't get Shohei Ohtani, if you don't get Yamamoto, if you don't get Glasnow, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of concern, right? Because this team does the same thing every year in the playoffs, it feels like. But, you know, I don't think it's going to keep Dodger fans. I didn't think it was going to keep Dodger fans away from the regular season, because they're always good on the regular season. That's never their issue, right? That's, it's like a Niner fan, right? Brandon knows this. Like, in the regular season, you know they're going to win 10-plus games every year. But it's not that what matters. For the Dodgers, it's in October what matters. And they got guys that I know are hungry to get to October. That's why I love this, these moves that they made, because Tyler Glasnow's never won a ring. Shohei Ohtani's never won a ring. You know, Yamamoto is a competitor, and he wants to get to the playoffs. Ohtani's never even been to the playoffs. So his incentive now, and the way he's going to play, is going to be geared towards that. And I think that the moves that they made now give a lot of Dodger fans a lot of confidence again, a lot of hope again. And obviously, when you see something, Arash, like you mentioned, where it looked just like the NLDS, where they weren't getting guys in from runners in scoring position. They were putting guys on and not getting them in. There's a little bit of shaky starting pitching. I know Jake mentioned this about Glasnow, you know, walking four guys. It looked like a repeat, and that always gives people some caution. But I think this team is destined to be another great regular season team, and I think that fans will certainly show up regardless of how much the prices of tickets increased, how much the prices of concessions have increased. Dodger fans show up no matter what it is. LA is a huge market, and fans will show up not just from LA, but now you have the Japanese market, so you're going to get a lot more there.
Really quick, to all three of you guys, Jake, Brandon, Grant, three guys who played the game of baseball. Whose fault is it that there's a hole in the glove? Again, I've never seen a play like that.
I don't think you can blame anybody. I think it's just one of those freak things where it's like guys are like, opening day for the player doesn't mean it's opening day for the glove. That glove's been through it for years and years. So that string was going to snap at some point. It somehow came at the worst possible time.
Yeah, maybe he didn't relace it before. I'm not really sure. I didn't relace my glove every game. I did it probably once every month or something. I didn't do it a lot. So maybe that's, in this case, what happened.
Yeah, it either got beat up or he didn't relace it. Either way, he learned the hard way.
It was just, like you guys said, worst possible time. Like, maybe it happens during a drill, practice, something like that. In a moment like that, you know, thankfully, it's just the first game of the season. I think it's an important, it's important to learn. I mean, can you imagine if that happened during the playoffs, you know, game 7 of the World Series or something that's like that? All right. Grant is going to leave us. We're going to sub him out. We have so many folks here on the Sporting Tribune. So we're going to have Fernando Ramirez sub it in for Grant. Fernando's at USC today. So let's leave it there for now. When we come back, we'll be joined by Fernando. When we come back right here on the Mightier 1090 in Southern California, the Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network.
We'll be right back with the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big, we go all night, and here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Welcome back to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, on the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 716 Hawaii. Just as a reminder, if you have a question or a comment, or want to win tickets to an upcoming game in Southern California, Las Vegas, or Hawaii. Caller hotline 310-400-0340. We got the crew back. Jake Dicker, Brandon Deutsche, Hey Wiley. And now we are welcoming in our good friend from the Sporting Tribune, Fernando Ramirez. Fernando, how are you?
I'm good, Arash. Just excited to be there. Brandon's here. I hadn't talked to him in forever, so that'll be cool to get to talk to him.
All right, so you've made the rounds, UCLA Pro Day, USC Pro Day. We know the top prospects. We actually, for the first time, or at least officially now, with the trade that the Chicago Bears made to trade away Justin Fields, we can all say the countdown's begun to Caleb Williams becoming the future starting quarterback of the Chicago Bears. Listen, you've seen him during his collegiate career. I don't know how much more we can learn from him throwing passes without defenders. Your thoughts on Caleb Williams being the first pick in the draft?
Well, obviously, Dan Quinn was there. I was taking a picture of him. He was present, and they have the number two overall pick. I was taking a picture of him. He turned, and he actually looked at me while I was taking the picture, and he didn't look happy. So I'm lucky to have escaped with my life. He's a big guy. But I mean, I don't know. I kind of feel like the Bears could pull something out where they may like trade out. I mean, you just never know. But yeah, no, he should be the first overall pick. I mean, and this isn't a knock on Caleb, but like behind him, like JJ McCarthy, too many questions, as the Riddler would say. Drake May, a lot of questions. Like everybody else has a lot of questions behind them. And Caleb, it was just, he was on a bad USC team with a bad, defense. His offense scored points. So, I think it's going to be kind of a little bit of everything else. The questions are going to be about everything else. Like, what is he going to do about the nails next year? Like all that. It's the fluff. Like I said, we're on weirdo times. There's a lot of smoke screens. Marvin Harrison Jr. didn't do anything at his pro day. Like he's like, I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to work out. I'm focused on the draft. So we're just, unfortunately, from now until the draft, it's just going to be a lot of smoke screens of, hey, Washington could jump up or somebody may get the first overall pick. But I just think it's, especially with the trade for Keenan Allen to the Bears, I think it's a slam dunk that Caleb will be the Chicago Bears quarterback, and they should be excited about it.
By the way, Fernando, can you just touch on that? I thought that was such a great trade for Caleb, presumably. I mean, Keenan Allen is really the perfect wide receiver for a young quarterback like that. Again, Caleb can scramble, create his own plays. Yeah. On a separate note, I know they're not going to go into the season without doing anything, but Justin Herbert not having his two targets, Mike Williams going to the New York Jets, and again, as you touched on, Keenan being traded to the Bears. I guess two parts there. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, first off, I thought it was a good trade for both parties. I thought it was a good trade by the Chargers. I know you're giving up Keenan Allen, but hey, if you didn't want to take a pay cut and you want your money, nothing against that, but they're doing, if you got Joey Bosa to take a pay cut, which I thought that was going to be the hardest one. I mean, you needed everybody else to do it and he decided not to. Well, hey, you're going to Chicago now. And he has experience with a rookie quarterback. He was a big reason of why Justin Herbert succeeded his first year, was because Keenan and Mike made everything smoother for him. And I feel like that's what he's going to do here. And then also he can help DJ Moore. DJ Moore is a guy who has kind of been up and down. He's a really good talent, but he's just a little bit up and down. And I feel like with Keenan, he could help him kind of the way he did with Mike. So I just think all around it's a great move for both teams. And for the Charger, on the Chargers side, Marvin Harrison Jr., actually, somebody saw that he liked the Chargers wide receiver depth chart. So maybe he's giving an indication of where he wants to go. But definitely, it's going to be interesting to see the way Jim Harbaugh and these guys decide to do. But hey, fans wanted him to, I know fans were angry at first about the Keenan Allen trade, but this is what you wanted. You wanted somebody that would come in here, shake things up, do things differently. That's what Jim's doing. And I think they need to trust the process. I mean, they've signed some very good talent for low risk, high reward. That's exactly what Jim Harbaugh is doing. I've said it before, Arash. This is going to be a money ball season for the Chargers. They're not going to hand out contracts of bigger than $4 million a year. And I actually am very surprised at the way they're doing this, but I feel like he's doing exactly what they needed to. And hey, next year you have over $100 million in cap space. With obviously Rashawn Slater needed to get re-signed if they decide to do that. Cause now with Jim, you don't know who's going to say who's going to go, but definitely I thought it was a a win-win on both sides for the Bears and for the Chargers.
So, Brandon, you know, before Caleb played a game at USC, you said that he will be the most talented quarterback at the program, which is really saying a lot when you talk about Matt Leinart, Carson Palmer. You go down the list of quarterbacks that they've had. He goes on to win the Heisman. This past season didn't really change his draft stock. He'll go one regardless. But your thoughts on Caleb, as he now looks without a doubt will be QB1 of this draft.
Yeah, I mean, the Bears are making the right decision. Part of it is it's not a knock on Fields, even though, you know, I don't know why Bears fans are so mad. He didn't show much in like 3 years. I know he didn't have a ton of weapons, but they got him DJ Moore last year. And what happened? They still won 6 or 7 games. Their line got better last year, even though it wasn't great. It improved. And he just doesn't look, he doesn't keep his eyes down the field. He looks to run. He doesn't look through his options. And I don't know why Bears fans are enamored with keeping him. At the end of the day, Caleb Williams is as close, and I know we throw this word around a lot, generational, but personally, like I've only evaluated quarterbacks for a few years. He's the best one I've seen. I know CJ Stroud has had an excellent rookie year. At the time, Caleb is a better prospect than CJ Stroud was last year. Now, CJ Stroud entered a great situation. Caleb Williams is going to enter a great situation. But the stuff he's doing in college, being able to extend plays, keep his eyes downfield. Now, he's not going to have that time in the NFL that he had in college a lot of the time to, you know, improvise and do that. He'll have to get the ball out quicker. Otherwise, he's going to take sacks. He's playing against grown men now, right? Not college kids. But at the end of the day, I do think his athleticism, his arm talent will play. There are some questions about his maturity that some teams have, you know, their reports about. Now, I don't really think we can really go into that because I don't know him personally. Everything I've heard is great, but some teams do question that, and that is something we'll have to monitor throughout the first few years of his career. But he's entering a great situation. He should have one of the best rookie quarterback seasons of all time.
Yeah. But by the way, we have to say goodbye to Fernando again. He is running around USC Pro Day now, and we'll check back with him tomorrow. And again, he was at UCLA Pro Day, USC Pro Day today. Transitioning to the NCAA tournament. By the way, props to Jake Dicker. Did a great regional recap of what to look forward to. Jake, what was your big takeaway? You know, as you looked at the brackets and we're going into the first round of, no disrespect to the first four, but that the Thursday, Friday is the beginning of the tournament for me. What is your biggest takeaway from this year's NCAA tournament?
Yeah, the bracket's really fun, right? Because you have UConn, who's the number one overall seed in the East, and the committee really did them no favors. They threw three other conference tournament champions at them at the 2-3-4 in Iowa State, Illinois, and Auburn. Auburn, one of the most underranked teams in the country, top five in KenPom, one of the best offensive and defensive teams amongst, you know, efficiency ratings. So that region's going to be really fun. The West is a little wide open. I think this could be, you know, the Pac-12's year to get a team back to the Final Four with Arizona. And then the Midwest is Purdue, which is just, you know, March and them as of late. It's just what are they going to do? Are they going to be the team that we've seen all year? Are they going to be the team that shows up in March losing, you know, games to St. Peter's and Fairleigh Dickinson as a 1-2? So that region's all storylines. And then you have Houston and Marquette in the South, with Kentucky, who might be the most talented team in the country. They're just young, so it's a matter if they can show up or not. But you got the teams at the top. I think, you know, we see a lot of parity in this tournament. Obviously, it's one and done. You have to win 6 straight every year. You see a team making a run to the, you know, the Elite Eight or the Final Four, double-digit seed that no one expected. I think this year it might be a little more straightforward. UConn is far and away, I think, the best team in the country next to Houston. If both of those teams don't shoot themselves in the foot, they'll be perfectly fine. And North Carolina and Arizona are probably the two best teams by far in that region. So it's going to be a fun tournament. It always is. Some team's going to make a run. We're going to come back to this audio of me in 3 days and laugh about how I got everything wrong, because that's just what happens in this tournament. But it's my favorite, you know, postseason of the year. Definitely not the best way to figure out who the best team is per se, but yeah. I think just in terms of format and entertainment, it's the most fun tournament in postseason in sports.
Jake, I wanted to know your I have two questions for you, but the first one is I wanted to know your upsets, because there's always a 7, there's always an 11, there's always a 12, there's always, mm-hmm. you know, somebody that's going to upset in the tourney. It always happens. It's going to happen since the dawn of time, whatever. Want to know what your upsets, what upsets you're looking at, and then also wanted to know who you think got hosed and should have been in the tournament instead of, like, let's say Virginia or Michigan State, who those are two teams that I don't think that deserve to even have a chance to be in the tourney.
Yeah. So I'll start with the teams who got left out. I did not have Virginia or Michigan State in the field going into Selection Sunday. And I know it's very easy now to say Virginia shouldn't have been there given the stinker they put up. Sure. But FAU as an 8 was super weird to me. I didn't think they were definitely on the bubble, and them solidly in the field as an 8 was a little weird. Northwestern as a 9, same thing. You know, the bubble blew up this year. There were so many bid stealers and automatic qualifiers that just threw teams right off the bubble. St. John's got completely screwed, in my opinion, and I thought they were going to get in. The Mountain West as a whole got 6 teams in, but I mean, I think they all got underseeded, which leads me to my first upset pick, which is New Mexico as an 11 over Clemson. New Mexico is a top 25 team in the net, and got seeded on the 11 line, which doesn't make a ton of sense to me. Vegas knows what's up. Vegas has them as the favorite to take down Clemson. And then in the second round, they would get the winner of Baylor Colgate. And I know Baylor with Scott Drew, they have the experience, the resume's there, but they haven't impressed me a ton all year. I could see New Mexico definitely making a Sweet 16 run. I like Drake to take down Washington State, 7-10 in the East. Oregon's getting hot at the right time. They're getting healthy. I know a lot of people are looking at the 5-12 upsets. Wisconsin, we're totally on upset watch. James Madison is one of the, you know, more underrated teams in the country. They didn't really play anybody, but they are one of the best 3-point shooting teams in the country, and Wisconsin is one of the worst defending the 3 in the country. So that's another popular one if you're looking for some value.
Really quick, wanted to get everyone's thoughts on this. Brandon, I'll start with you. Do you just fill out one bracket, as my former colleague Mike Greenberg would call it, the sheet of integrity, where you don't fill out 20 brackets? And by the way, we will. I'm going to put G-Hate in charge of putting out the brackets for us. Brandon, one sheet or 20, or how many do you fill out?
I usually have like 2 or 3 main ones that I like really believe in. And then a few I just submit like, okay, maybe this happens. Like maybe South Dakota State beats, you know, Iowa State. I'm actually not too high on Iowa State though, even though they just won. I think that's going to be one of those things where they won the tournament and everyone's high on them, and then they choke, like either in round 1 or 2 or 3. You know, I don't think they're going on a deep run. That's just something I'll put out there. I think Samford over Kansas is a lock. Again, I'm not an expert by any means, but just looking at the metrics, Kansas has been what we call, we won't say it because it's probably too vulgar to say, but they haven't been playing great, atrocious basketball over the past few months.
Inconsistent.
Inconsistent. So I also like Charleston over Bama. I think that's an easy pick. Charleston can put up 70, 80 points whenever they want, but Bama's also high-paced in what they do. So I think there are a ton of upsets that could happen on day one. I know there's that conspiracy that Longwood's going to beat Houston. Don't fall for that. Houston's going to beat Longwood. So.
Jihei and Jake, one sheet, one bracket, or several?
I am a one sheet person.
Oh, all right.
Okay, so if there's a second one, which there's a huge if, it's like so far-fetched with so many upsets that like you couldn't even be convinced that it was a real attempt. But I am a one. I rarely go back and make changes. Whatever I go with my gut and my first instincts is usually what I go with, because no one knows anything and there's going to be a lot of red on it at the end regardless of how I do it. Yeah. So I'd rather, on the off chance that I do really well, surprise myself and say this is just what I thought was going to happen. Because if you make 5 or 10, one of them is going to do well. You know, they're playing the law of averages there.
Yeah, I'm going to golf clap you for that one sheet of integrity, man, because you know what's better than filling out one bracket? All of the brackets, man. I fill out like 20. I fill out like so many. It's insane. Whatever they let me do, I will fill out all the brackets. Same thing as Brandon, though. I will give like a few that I'm definitely like, these are my top 5. This is what I'm going with. And then the other 15 or 10 of them, I'm going to be like, they're whatevers. You know, they're kind of throwaways. Like, let's just do and see what happens. We'll do all of the upsets, or we'll do all of the favorites. We'll do just a chalk bracket, or, you know, something like that, just for fun. But yeah, I golf clap for you, man, for the cheat of integrity. I would never do that. I don't think I've ever done that, even when I first started filling out brackets. So I kudos to you, Jake. Yeah. Arash, what about you? Are you filling out more than
one sheet
this year?
Yeah, you know what? For me, it's one sheet, but not because, you know, I believe strongly in it. I just, like, if I fill one out, like, I'm just happy. And so I'm really depending on you, Jihei, to give us a link in so we could all fill one out and I can kind of follow along. I mean, I got lucky one year where I won it all, but that really goes to show you that, I mean, you never know.
It's a crapshoot.
It's total crapshoot. Let's end today on a fun one. One of the more viral moments from the Seoul series in South Korea between the Dodgers and the Padres has been the cheerleaders. Again, baseball is the sport. Without cheerleaders, we have it in basketball and football, hockey. There's the guys crew, the ice girls, whatnot. Listen, it's gone both ways, but basically the Dodgers cheerleaders, for lack of a better word, they are on top of the dugout and they're in between, you know, the top of the, like, first inning, bottom of the second, you know, they're out there dancing, getting the crowd into it. Brandon, I'm going to start with you. Is this something that Major League Baseball or the Dodgers in particular should consider?
Yes, only because of what the Lakers did with, you know, the late great Buss in the 80s. It's about glitz, it's about glamour, it's about the show. I think it's a part of it. I really do. I mean, I think you've just got to expand people's minds on this, make it more entertaining. It's always going to play that stuff.
I totally agree. Listen, because people have to remember before, so when Dr. Buss did that, he went to USC. And again, the Song Girls were a big part of the tradition at USC. And again, you know, when you watch the documentary and some of the shows about him, I mean, he kind of did like the glitz and the glamour. He liked to go to the Playboy Mansion and things like that. At that point in time, the NBA did not have cheerleaders like that. So the Laker girls were a big thing because, you know, if you want celebrities and you want fans to stay in their seats during timeouts and halftime, things like that. Right now in Major League Baseball, there is no, to my knowledge, dance squad, cheerleader, something like that. Jake, what would you think if the Dodgers said, you know what? We kind of like this. We're going to bring this to Dodger Stadium in the future.
Yeah, I think it would be really interesting because it's just a completely different game day experience. You have that, you have the music playing and the fans with the flags and the drums and this. I know the Marlins this year are actually allowing fans to bring drums, instruments, and flags in to kind of try and replicate that experience. Because baseball in America is kind of the only place where it doesn't really happen. And baseball is different than other sports because unlike the NBA or the NFL, there aren't these half times or like long timeouts where there's need for entertainment per se, or there's space for it. Cause even when there's in between innings, guys are still on the field. So like a lot of these in-game entertainment things you see are with like in-game hosts out in the concourse doing, you know, was it stupid challenge here, there, whatever. So I think this would be really neat, right? When I think the Buss, you know, comparison's a great example. And when he did it, everyone thought he was crazy. And I know it doesn't sound like something that would necessarily work or, you know, kind of flourish right off the bat per se, but I feel like it could be really cool.
Hey, your thoughts on the Dodger girls, for lack of a better term. This is not something that they're considering at the moment. But again, I mean, like, this has been a very viral moment because fans who are there, they kind of like it. And so your thoughts?
God bless Korea for having those people up there. They look so adorable. Here's the problem with it is that you'd have to have it on different levels, right? Because in Korea, they only had a small area for those cheerleaders to be in that area. Dodger Stadium is 8 million times bigger than that ballpark. Like, where are you going to put all those girls? And that's fine. Like, yay, entertainment, I guess. Good for you. Like, maybe have them. But I think that there's a lot more questions that it needs to be a little bit more perfected. If it does, then great, great for them. I also want to give a shout out to the girl that sang the national anthem because she did a great job. Like, kudos to that woman for being able to do both. She sang the United States national anthem, and then she sang the Korean national anthem. Kudos to her for that. I wanted to shout her out.
Yeah, that was very, very cool. And so, listen, I mean, I think it's always fun when you go to different countries, and Gia, you're 100% right. That stadium, I was kind of surprised. I mean, it looks small. It seats less than 20,000. So it's a very small facility. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Let's do it again tomorrow. Until then, this is Arash Markazi saying stay safe, stay healthy.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio. Hustle for the cash, so it's hard to knock it. Everybody got their own thing. Currency chasing worldwide through the hard times. Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.